Fowlerfilms.com. Staging in the left lane is your host, founder and creator of the Drag List, Bill Pratt. And in the right lane, John, the Wildcat One. You're going to hear news and interviews from the world of drag racing, both now and then. So get yourself situated, pull your belts tight, grab your favorite beverage, and get ready for some racing and rocking.
Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome to Racing and Rockin' with DragList.com, produced and broadcast by the Zeus Radio Network for Racers Reunion Radio. I'm Bill Pratt. It's great to be with you tonight, because tonight we feature top alcohol dragster racer Len Cottrell of the famous Chicken Chokers team. We're going to ask some racing questions, John's going to ask some rockin' questions, and you can join our live chat during the show. Go to RacersReunion.com. Of course, we are live broadcasting on Facebook as well. Without further ado, my old friend, Len Cottrell, welcome to the show.
Yep, I've known you for a couple hundred years, I guess.
Been a while.
Yep.
Well, you know, so I guess let's get this out of the way. First thing, let's set the record straight once and for all. What made you guys name your team the Chicken Chokers? I've been reading about you since I was a kid. Well, not that young. But yep. It's always been an iconic team, and it's been a lot of fun.
Well, that's probably one of the most popular asked questions. And it goes back to, 1986, when John Spielman, and I'll bring up his name quite a bit because he and I got started, back in the 70s, and we were off and on back and forth through the last 30 or 40 years.
Right.
But, we were racing, and we were down at Bristol, Tennessee, racing at an IHRA national event. And the announcer at the track for this national event was a guy who some of you old guys might remember, Berserko Bob, from Berserko's Lounge up in Jersey. But at any rate, we're up there, and the crew guys were all getting on each other's nerves, and everybody was getting too tense. So during the night, we stopped at a novelty store, and I got a rubber chicken. Came back to the trailer, and I got in the trailer early and tied it to the rear wing of the trailer, or the race car. And when we rolled the car out the next morning, all the guys are saying, "What the hell's this rubber chicken doing hanging on the rear wing?" I said, "It's for two reasons. One, we're all serious, deadly serious racers, but it's got to be fun, too. So this is to make sure that you all remember this is for fun." So that was the intent. It was for a one-shot deal at Bristol. Bob Berserko saw it in the pits and came by, and he says, "Well, I'll tell you what," he says, "after John does the burnout, back it up, and why don't you just go up and grab that chicken and just shake it a little bit." I had no idea what I was getting set up for, but at any rate, here we are at a national event, 40,000 people, and I get up there, and John does the burnout. I shake the chicken, and Berserko says, "Well, folks," he says, "it's gotten to the point where Cottrell and Spielman could do nothing but choke their chickens." And that was it. That was in 1986, and we left the chicken on. And later on in the 2000s, we tried to take the chicken off. And everybody got really upset and said, "No, you got to have the chicken on there," because it stayed on there, through every run, and we had a lot of fun. It just became so iconic that was it. So that's the whole background on it. And that wasn't even one of the questions you were going to ask, but that's it.
No, it's exactly the question I was going to ask. But I tell you, it's such one of those stories where, I tell you, if someone had asked me 10 minutes ago, I would have sworn that you guys were known as the Chicken Chokers in the 70s. And that just goes to show you how legends get started, because it's always been just part of the deal as far as I remember. Pretty amazing.
Yep, well, I'm older. It might be 60s, 70s, 80s. It's hard to say, but I'm pretty sure that was it. So
That's so great. Well, speaking of that, you know, you've been competitive in top alcohol dragster for more than 40 years now. Tell us how the class has changed over the years and how difficult it is to keep up with all those performance improvements.
Yeah, that's been a real severe issue. Back in the 70s, we all started out, it was funny cars and dragsters all running in the same class, supercharged alcohol and injected nitro dragsters, mm-hmm. and it was all called Pro Comp back then. And then it was later on in the 70s that they split it out and came up with top alcohol dragster and top alcohol funny car. And that started everything going. At that time, there were a handful of injected nitro cars running with the blown alcohol.
Right.
But to be honest, they weren't that competitive then. They were okay, but not deadly competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, it's gotten to the point where the injected nitro cars have really stepped up their game. They've done more research. They've really worked it. And there was more potential in running injected nitro as far as horsepower than the supercharged alcohol.
Right.
And to the point where I just watched the Winter Nationals this weekend, and the number one qualifier was a 5.11,
right.
280 miles an hour in injected nitro. And if somebody pushed us down a well, we couldn't go that quick with the blown alcohol cars. So
right.
It just gotten worse and worse. NHRA spent years trying to create parity with the class, trying to even it up, and they're just two different animals. You just can't mix them up and make them work. So
right. I remember back in the days, you know, the A-fuel cars would every now and then they'd come out with some crazy run and go really fast, but the consistency was not there. Once they got them consistent, they were deadly.
You're absolutely right, and that's exactly what happened. So,
well,
and I mean, the really crazy part was a young girl that ran the 5.11 at the Winter Nationals. I'd never even seen her before. It was the first time she'd ever run an NHRA competition, to the best of my knowledge. And here she went out and ran 5.11. Yeah, and went all the way to the finals. So that forced me to make a change a couple weeks ago. That'll be an interesting change.
So go ahead.
I'll give you the heads up. After it's been 44 years since we ran the alcohol dragster. I ran mm-hmm. a funny car, alcohol funny car prior to that, but
right.
the last 40 years it's been strictly dragsters. And I had, what do they call it, an epiphany in the middle of the night. An epiphany, that's it. I had an epiphany at Charlotte last month, and I said, this is crazy, this is enough. I can't stand not being competitive. We've got to step up the game and do something. So, during the middle of the night, I said, okay, it's time to make a big change and go back to top alcohol funny car.
Oh, my goodness.
Which was my roots, and at least there, they don't have injected nitro and blown alcohol mixed together in the same class.
Right.
So, I want to get back on a level playing field, and I don't mind, you know, running against everybody that's got the same basic combination, and everybody, you know, just tries to do their best. So, I mean, I talked to the crew guys the next morning after I woke up from my deep sleep and said, that's the direction we need to go. So, I made a commitment right there, and next year we're going to start off the season with a top alcohol funny car. It's been a long time.
Oh, you heard it here first, folks. So maybe guess you were if you've been in the crowd with Len back then, you didn't hear it here. But that's a huge jump, and I was going to mention that. You know, as you know, you did race with R.C. Sherman, that great looking Corvette that you ran back in the days, and you know, that was one of my favorites because that was just a wicked looking car, but and it ran super good too.
But, oh, wow. It's one of my favorites, too. 1972, it was actually R.C. Sherman's first ride in a funny car. He had never been in a funny car prior to that, and he and I went to high school together. So after the season 72, things didn't work out exactly right. So we kind of went our separate ways, and then I hooked up with John Spielman, and we took off with the whole Dragster thing. And but actually, even Spielman and I, during the mid 70s, we went off and one season we ran Sirius Top Fuel in 1977.
You're taking all my show notes and beating me to. That's why you're such a good driver. You're getting the whole shot on me. So tell us about it. I know in 77, you were running some solid 6.0s back then, and I qualified at Indy, and that was pretty cool. Tell us what it was like to jump into the Nitro deal for a while.
It was probably the most awesome experience ever. And we got really lucky. I mean, we went to Maple Grove, the Keystone Nationals. It was I forget what the big race was that they had in spring every year prior to the Keystones. But it was our third race of the year, and we went there, and Jim and Allison Lee were number one qualifier in Top Fuel at a 6.13, and we were a day late getting there because we were working on the engine all night trying to get it fresh. And we rolled out and had one qualifying shot and bumped them down to number two, and we took over the top spot. And that was probably the finest moment of my whole entire racing career at that point.
Was that 6.09 that you guys ran?
Yep, that was it.
Yep.
And it was a clean run. And the crazy part was, we're running Top Fuel then. We only had three guys working on the car, John, myself, and one crew guy. I mean, we did leak downs. We checked the spark plugs, replaced them, adjust the valves. And there is 10 times more work that goes on with a top alcohol car today than there was then. So that's crazy. And then the following year, we actually started out, we said, well, that worked out pretty good, but the truth was, halfway through the season, we were using up some parts. I mean, every 10 runs, you have to put new cylinder heads. Every couple of runs, a new clutch. And we ran out of money during 77. And then 78, we decided to give a shot at running a top fuel funny car. And John and I got together, and we only had a handful of races early in the season. And John was in a situation where his father-in-law was willing to sponsor the car to go racing full-time, basically, primarily as a match race car. And that's when John and I went our separate ways. There wasn't any problems or issues, but he wanted to go racing full-time, and I couldn't. I was still working and had two kids, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So we went our own way, and he had a very successful season for the next 2 years in the Blue Bayou funny car.
Mm-hmm.
And so he did pretty good, and then I hooked up with another one of our Ramrod members, Ronnie Wood, and he and I put together an alcohol dragster and ran that for a couple of years till he moved out of the area. And so off and on and then John and I got back together, and then we went separate ways, and we got back together. Go ahead.
I mean, you and John is, you know, obviously the number one guy with it. You know, you had tons of success, but oh my gosh, if you had a roster of drivers. I was just taking a look at all the numbers, and I'll actually put our links to your stuff up on the chat here, but oh my goodness, it's got to be 20, 25 guys you've put in competitive top alcohol dragsters over the years.
18, Bob Fry, keep track of it. And he would call me up every time I put a new driver in. He'd say, okay, you're up to number 15, 16, you know, whatever. And as of today, it's been 18 drivers. since it started. And it's been a bunch of good drivers, Tim Slagle and Steve Lamplow and Ronnie Wood, who's hiding down in Florida. He's afraid to come and visit because he's afraid he might get hooked again.
Yeah, but, I can see that, yeah. But, you know, they've all been so, so tough. I mean, you name it's like the who's who of East Coast top alcohol, you know, funny car and dragster drivers in it. And, you know, converted a lot of guys like Slagle. You converted him from funny cars to drive your dragster. So, you know, he might come knocking again.
No, unfortunately, he's passed.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, he passed away, good 6-7 years ago. So... had some health issues, and unfortunately, there's a lot of them that have. I started realizing there's 5 or 6 of my drivers that have passed. R.C. Sherman, you know, was one of the first ones, and Kenny Riker was actually the first one. He and I were partners back in the 60s with an A-gas supercharged car.
Right, and, you know, that was great.
Yep, so, and then, like I said, time keeps going on, but for some stupid reason, I get more addictive instead of less addictive. I should be backing up, but this funny car thing has me more excited than I've been in decades, and it's got the driver and everybody else. Mike Burns has been driving for me for the last 6-7 years.
Right.
And they said, well, how's he going to do with a funny car? And I said, I think he's going to do fine. He owned his own funny car for 3 years, and won a bunch of Midwest, you know, championships and races, and
that's
he's looking forward. He loves driving a funny car more than a dragster. So, and he's kept his license active, so he's already ready to go. All he has to do is jump in, and make one single pass, and he's race ready.
That is so cool. We're really excited about that. And you know, I tell you, another thing just occurred to me today. Is that you were a regular columnist at draglist.com back in the 2000 to 2002 era. Do you recall those days, the Chicken Choker Chronicles?
I used to, absolutely. I mean, I used to look at your drag list, and I mean, I was even surprised you had every single driver, his best ET, where he was from, his grandmother's maiden name. I mean, if you wanted to find out something about a owner or driver, just look in drag list and you'd find it.
Well, we're still like you. We're still crazy enough to keep trying to do this, but thank goodness for Danny White doing all the hard work and a bunch of other great volunteers. But I did find those old articles, and I just put a link on the chat for everybody who wants to go out and check out what Lenny was doing during the 2000 era. Because it was very entertaining, and just like the chicken, you would expect with the Chicken Choker, the stories were really entertaining and a lot of fun.
Yep, and a lot of them were truth-telling. It was falling on my sword after a not-so-good race, I'd have to say, you know, everything was great, but the tune-up was wrong, you know.
Yeah.
We missed an opportunity, but we really had more... We've had more fun and success than anything else, so that's continues to be what it's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually had a guy once, I won't mention any names, but it was one of the top alcohol websites that specialized in top alcohol days. Well, he says, well, I'll run these if you convert them to AP style and make them like news. I'm like, BS, man. I'm not changing a word. These are going to be exactly like this. They were awesome. You get that you get that PR stuff anywhere. You can't get what you wrote anywhere but
well,
you.
The truth is, I still do it after every race, and I've even come up with a real simple format. It's the Chicken Chokers Chronicles, and it's like Norwalk 1987 or 92 or whatever year it is, and just give a 3-bullet highlight of, you know, what happened and how he did. And it's amazing. Everybody keeps calling up and saying, please add me to your distro list, and I want to get up. But I might not respond and tell you, but I look forward to them all the time just to get in the feedback. And it's like living, you know, going to the races with you guys and and stuff like that. So
sure.
That's kind of
do you post those? I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you post those on Facebook, or do you have those in an email list?
No, I'm an old guy, and Facebook doesn't. I'm not comfortable with it because I don't know if I send something out on Facebook. I don't know whether it's going to the whole world, if it's going to just friends, if it's going to three people. And sometimes I might say something a little sharp. So I used to email and I say, okay, here's the 10 people. Or like with the Chicken Jerker Chronicles, I'll do a distribution list.
Got
and
it.
I'll know every single person that I'm sending that to.
Right.
And then I'm comfortable with, but Facebook, I don't know. I just...
Well, it's a lot. I mean, we got 342,000 and many of them overseas, and it's you know, so Lord knows. Anyway.
Yep.
I tell you what, Lenny, it's been so much fun. I'm out of time from my side. I want to turn you over to John to talk about some of his music, because we know you're huge into music as well. So, John, take it away.
Yeah, thanks, BP. You know, Len, it's great having a musical historian on the show with us. And we chatted briefly before showtime, and you had mentioned that you won a trivia contest with a radio station. I'd like to know what the answer was that you gave them to the question that they asked.
No, it wasn't, there wasn't one single contest that I was in. I'm so so involved with the old 50s, 60s music. I used to have friends that would call me up. They'd be in a bar on a bar bet, and they'd say, okay, who sang this song? I gotta know. And for some reason, I remembered all the songs, all the artists, everything that happened back in the day. And it, I don't know, it just stuck with me. So I still get those calls, but I'll give you a flavor. One of the questions you were going to ask is something about, have you been to any concerts lately? Right now, I'm down in Cocoa Beach. My wife and I just got back from a 7-day cruise in the Caribbean. And it was a 7-day cruise, and on the cruise was 20 groups from the 50s and 60s performing for the entire week. And this is our fourth consecutive year doing this. So I'll just give you a quick flavor of who was on the ship and perform. These are all legitimate, you know, serious artists. Dion the Belmonts was on the cruise.
Oh, wow.
Brenda Lee, Bobby Rydell, Righteous Brothers, obviously only half of the Righteous Brothers, but Bill Medley was there and he made up for it. Jan and Dean had a beach party thing. Jay and the Americans, Brian Hyland with the yellow polka dot bikini, and the Vogue, the Condors, Danny and the Juniors, the Drifters, Everly Brothers tribute.
That was fantastic.
Artist. And last year we had Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, Ronnie Spector, Miracle, Shirelles, Skyliners, Freddie Boom Boom, Ken, the Tokens. So. That answers a couple of the music questions. I still love all those groups, and they love performing. They really, 2,000 people on the ship, and every single night the auditorium's just packed with people to see all those performers.
Wow. Well, just listening to that just puts me in heaven, man. That's the best of the best. That is fantastic. I wouldn't even want to. I wouldn't want that cruise to end. I'd want it to keep going on. You know.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't want this show to end. I'd like it to keep going on too. But unfortunately, we're out of time. Lenny, can you come back and talk to us again one of these days soon?
Yeah, I could probably go on for another hour or two. So yeah, we could probably do another session.
Cool. We'll do a 5-part series.
I could do one whole session just to talk about the 1975 first Puerto Rican nationals in Puerto Rico.
Wow.
That's a great deal on itself.
It was an amazing event. And off the track, mostly.
Well, my old longtime buddy Larry Clayton, from former MIR owner, with
he's
Bob
listening,
McAlee.
By the way.
I know he's listening, so he dared me to say, you know, bring up anything about going to the Black Angus Supper Club in Puerto Rico. It was a questionable club, but he was there. But it was before he met his wife, so it's okay. But Darwin Dahl, Lex Dudas, Berserko Bob, Steve Collison, who became the Superstock editor, Freddie right. Fry, there's just tons of people. So that could be a whole session all by itself.
I've only heard bits and pieces, but man, I'm going to buy you a beer and hear a preview of that anyway. Well, Len, we got to go, buddy. Thank you so much for calling. It's been a pleasure having you. And ladies and gentlemen, okay. Len Cottrell, the Chicken Choker, and we're having him back, so do not fear.
Okay, guys, thanks.
Bye. Thank you, Len.
All right, John. Well, you're on the clock, buddy. We're 8:26. Go for it with the Racer of the Week, and I think that might have to wrap us up.
You got it, BP. My pick for Racer of the Week is Dave Fisher from Heston, Pennsylvania. I met Dave earlier this year while I was at the Draglist Nationals with the Draglist Supercrew at Keystone Raceway Park in New Alexandria, which is just outside of Greensburg near Pittsburgh. Dave built and races an incredible hot rod. The first thing I told him when I walked up to his pit was, I've been dreaming about this car all my life. It's a 64 Volkswagen Beetle Gasser he calls One Bad Bug. It is powered by a front-engine small-block Chevy with a Holley Dominator and an air scoop, custom headers, full-tube chassis, and 59 Cadillac fins that are perfectly positioned coming out of the side of the body and molded onto the top of the widened rear fenders. The fins are sized correctly, so they don't look overly done in comparison to the dimensions of the car. Incorporated into the ultra-dynamic styling of the fins is a clear plexiglass spoiler, which is virtually invisible but fully functional, and a parachute bracket. The car is flawlessly built from stem to stern, and the interior, in addition to the full roll cage, has a custom tin work job with tubs, all handcrafted by Dave at his shop. If not for the fins and the semi-ghosted flames added to the car's ivory-white paint job, you could walk past it and not know that it's a full-blooded gasser that runs like a bat out of hell. The front fenders and panels stay put. The front hood is removable, which gives excellent access to the engine. In that small space, it fits snugly but comfortably along with a radiator, a fan, and a fuel cell. Dave told me that the engine is pretty much stock except for the added power that the Dominator supplies to it, and it does not require extensive maintenance either at home or at the track, other than an oil filter and oil change, spark plugs, and basic stuff that anybody else would do. It's reliable, durable, and competitive, just like it is. He won his class that day, running through a tough field, and I watched the little bug running the high nines at right around 140 miles an hour. And back in the 60s, Dave played in a psychedelic rock band. He's an individual who stands out in everything he does. He thinks different than the rest of us do. His bug is quite an amazing sight to behold, and he was a shoe-in for Racer of the Week spot. He told me he races regionally and has considerable success with this hot rod. Dave and his crew couldn't have been nicer to me. I was a total stranger to them. I just walked up. They're a group of laid-back, easygoing guys who love to drag race and have fun with this truly magnificent example of ingenuity in motion. Dave, we wish you good luck, safe racing, and the best of times in the future. Back to you, BP.
Thank you, John. Great, great segment there, and that was a cool car indeed.
It was.
It was great to see everybody up at Bruce Larson's USA One Drag Fest on Saturday. Jack Red and I went up the hill, and we saw tons and tons and tons of friends. I can't begin to name them all, but love you all. We do want to mention very briefly our lost friend, the littlest lost friend, Anita Board, junior dragster racer from Australia, was only 8 years old. Unfortunately, a top-end accident, and her junior dragster had her hitting the wall and perishing. a few days later. Our deepest sympathies to the family and to all of our racers in Australia. It's an unimaginable loss. My own children raced at that age, and they didn't keep with it, but they were out there doing it, and you make them as safe as you can, and I really, really a tragedy. But bless her little heart, Anita Board, passing away on the 12th. Let's wrap it up, folks. We want to thank Len Cottrell, our dear old friend, John Bockelman, Danny White, Jeff and Dustin Gilder, Barb Santucci, Bud and Mr. Drag News DeBoer. As John says, we won't be broadcasting on November 20th or 27th, so have a fabulous Thanksgiving. Join us in December as we start to celebrate the 2017 champions. And Barb's lining them up right now. Adios, everybody. Have a great holiday, and we'll see you when we come back. Late one night.